the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. And with me again, as is typically the case, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcasts. And, you know, this is like, if you haven't gotten onto his podcast with the Cardinals at the state that they are in, and where we are in the football season, the Bulls, this is the perfect time to start getting onto that podcast because we're officially in draft season. And, you know, I subscribe to the podcast, but guess what? This is when I'm going to start listening to everything, and I will come into the off season so I know who in the world these players are coming up. So in this episode, we're in episode 388. Closing in on 400, guys. You know, 9 years in, 400 episodes we're coming up on. And the Cardinals lose again. I mean, there's no surprise. The Cardinals lose another game, this time to the Atlanta Falcons, 20-19, a game in which they played pretty okay. But, and of course, at the end of the game, the defense gives up a game-winning drive. We're going to talk about that. In this edition of the show, we're gonna lead with this quarterback position, David Blough, and how he did against the Falcons. We're gonna react to the outcome of the game, the good and the bad. We're gonna look at the week 18 matchup, whether DeAndre Hopkins will play, who should start a quarterback, and we'll preview that hapless end to the season against a 49ers team that are favored by 14 plus points this weekend. Oh, it's a great time to be a Cardinals fan, right, Seth?
Yeah, 14's a lot, man.
That is like so much. That's like Bills against the Texans type of line.
Yeah, it's crazy to see it. And you know, it was one of those games where it was, you know, the day or it was New Year's Day, and so you woke up a little sleepy from the night before, and you're like, well, at least I don't have a ton to worry about. And thankfully, it wasn't even a very, newsworthy game. It was great to see Trey McBride catch his first touchdown pass. I mean, that's always fun. But, you know, for the most part, it was just one of those situations where you saw a team in the Arizona Cardinals put their best foot forward. And as we're watching the game, my wife is going, wait, who is that player?
That was a ragtag bunch of players that they had playing when you had David Blough at quarterback. This was kind of the lineup. So they had David Blough, Corey Clement playing most of the plays at running back, and Andre Bocelli getting significant snaps at receiver. You have Christian Mathieu and Jace Whitaker playing almost every snap in the game. No Buda Baker, no Zach Allen. And this team is down two. This is definitely this is a minor league team as how it's there set up right now. But let's talk about David Blough. And after we've seen Colt McCoy was, it was kind of a surprise. If you want to get conspiracy here, it almost feels like the Cardinals wanted to find an excuse to get another quarterback, because Colt McCoy came out of concussion protocol last week, cleared it Wednesday. He practiced Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday experienced some concussion-like symptoms, and so he didn't practice. And then David Blough, with basically one day of practice, was called upon to start. Apparently the Cardinals saw enough about from Trace McSorley against the Buccaneers. They're like, okay, it's Blough's turn. And then the weird thing is then on Monday, you know, because McCoy had concussion-like symptoms, but didn't go back in concussion protocol. So that's the part that's kind of weird about everything. But David Blau, a guy that had been with the team a minute, you know, very, very little amount of time. What about like 3 weeks he'd been on the roster? I was mildly impressed by his play against the Falcons. I will give this caveat that he didn't have as tough an opponent as McSorley did. The Falcons are a bad defense. Tampa Bay has a really good defense. And so it was not apples to apples, but you still liked seeing the way that Blau handled himself, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think that's the difference in a guy that's been in the league a little bit and you know, had some minor success in the league. And you know, versus a guy who's still trying to kind of find his way in the league. I mean, you look at Blau, he's now started 6 games. Yeah, he's 0-6, but like He's had some moments. He's 0-6, excuse me. You know, he's had some moments in the league. McSorley's been in the league, you know, the same amount of time, and he started 1 game. And so that's kind of the difference when you're talking, you know, being in the league, starts, opportunities. It shows, and like you said, it wasn't an apple to apple in comparison of opponents outside of that they're from the bad NFC South, but there is the apple to apple of like, you could, it just seemed like Blau was the better quarterback.
It did. It just, he made better throws. He did not seem as rattled. He had a really cool demeanor about him when he played. And oddly enough, for a guy that had been on the roster only a little amount of time, He seemed to handle himself. He just looked competent, which when we watched McSorley against the Bucks, there was a lot of he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't good.
He also missed a lot of gimmies. Which
yeah, that was it too. It's like Blau. You were impressed with his arm. You were impressed with the throws that he made, and the way he handled himself. And you're like, I don't get too excited. But one, it was against a questionable Falcons defense, but you look at how he played and you think that you have a little something with him on the roster, right?
And that's the thing, is you know that you're looking into either a backup or a, you know,
like he's a lock for the number, like he's the back, he's a lock for the number 3 on the roster, or you know, the number 2 till Kyler's healthy,
right? And or a short term starter. So you want to see more of what you have in him over a guy like Trace. And quite frankly, you know, I was texting you guys this too. I with Colt's age and unfortunate injury history, which is basically every time he starts, he ends up
with
getting
some sort
nicked
of an
up
injury.
Nicked up in some way. Is Blau that bad of an option? And that's what you kind of have to look at right now. You know, because the other thing is, we've seen what it looks like when you bring a guy in, like a, you know, one of those veterans, like a Marcus Mariota, right? Who knew that they drafted a Desmond Ridder, and then when they moved to Desmond Ridder, took his ball and went home. We also, and Derek Carr didn't do anything wrong, but you know, the Raiders asked him not to come back to the facility. Like all of these things matter in the scheme of the organization in the locker room. So you have to have a guy that understands what his role is. It doesn't mean that he plays poorly, but he understands that unless he's, you know, Lou Gehrig, you're not getting that job. Like Kyler's getting that job back when he comes back. And so you have to have a guy that understands that mentality.
Well, and it's, he plays with a competence, and because of the career he's had, he's always hungry and working for, like, he's got the mentality that he's going to get cut because he's been cut before.
Right. Well, and he just, I mean, he did some things in the game that you weren't getting from Trace and that you just physically can't get from Colt anymore. And that was the other thing that you look at is you had a guy in Blau who was able to make throws down the field a little more because his arm's a little stronger, right? But as you mentioned, he's a little more accurate than Trace is. But he's also able to move a little bit more than Colt does, and that's not a shot at Colt. That's just a reality of a 36-year-old quarterback, right? Like, you don't move the same at 36.
Like, I will say, Colt moves around better than either one of us.
Right. He moves around well for a 36-year-old in the NFL, but he doesn't move as well as a 27-year-old. Like, that's, you know, those are all the things that matter in that. And so, you know, when you look at it, I think it's just I'm not going to say like, oh, David Blau is just a better quarterback than Colt McCoy, but I think he might give you something more with what you're working with at this time, unfortunately. And that's, again, not a shot at Colt, but, you know, if you're working with an offensive line that can't block and receivers who are best being utilized, you know, in outside and down the field, what, you know, is Colt the best option? And that's going to be what's interesting. But you've got an interesting theory that we'll talk about later too. So,
yeah. So yeah, let's kind of look at moving forward. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the reaction to the game. What were the good? Was it bad? We'll talk about the good and the bad from the game because yeah, let's do that next. Coming up on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals lose 20-19 to the Atlanta Falcons. And yeah, it's. I thought that game played out perfectly. I mean, I will say this: you guys know me. You want the Cardinals to win, right? Yes. Watching a team that wins is so much better. You want, for the player's sake, to win games because it's miserable to lose in the NFL. You work too hard during the week to then lose the game. It's depressing. They work really, really hard to win games, and so they take losses hard. It's hard on the coaches, it's hard on the players, and so for their sake, you want to see it. You want to see wins. But we got the perfect mix of what we need for this team. One, a great effort. They played extremely. And if there's one thing that we can say about Cliff Kingsbury, we'll have to say it again. This group of players have not given up on Cliff. They haven't stopped playing hard. They are still trying to win games. And that perhaps might be the greatest thing you can say about Cliff, say what you will about a lot of other things, but the fact that he still has this unit, this team, which has no hope at all, player after player injured, and they're still playing. Now, granted, and especially they play fairly competently in the first half of pretty much every game. Like, even the San Francisco game, they were playing them relatively even until late in the first half, and then the wheels fell off. That's kind of what happened in every game since. They just don't finish games. But if you're looking about the long-term health of this team, to have them play encouragingly decent and then to lose the game, not to ruin things for the draft, you got exactly that. And so it's exactly what you, it's if you could find a perfect scenario for this particular Cardinals team, they play well enough to win, but don't win because the potential of having a top four pick with the players that are going to be available, at least evaluate the, what we know evaluatively so far, the impact of a top four player outweighs a win, a meaningless win that causes you to lose out on the blue chip talent in the draft.
Right. And so that's the way you look at it. And you're just looking at what does this team have and how are they able to continue to move forward? And like you said, it, a lot of it just comes down to they're working through it and they're putting themselves in a position to win. They're just not, I mean, let's just be honest. They're just not talented enough to win games. And, you know, that's frustrating to an extent. But it's also one of those situations where you look at it and you go, oh, this is a situation where it's not a huge deal that they're losing games at the end because, like you said, they're not playing for anything. I mean, playing for pride. And like you said, playing hard for their coach is actually a really good thing to see. It just becomes, you know, are they just lack talent.
They lack the talent on the team right now.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So look at the defense, right? The defense is playing fairly well. So you look at who got the snaps. Christian Mathieu, who you and I both like coming out. We're excited
every
about his
snap.
Yeah, we're excited about his future. That's a seventh round pick, a 2022 seventh round pick from Valdosta State,
a tiny school that you've never heard of. Valdosta State. I don't know where Valdosta State is. I don't think. And
I think it might be Georgia, but I could be wrong.
I think so.
So Jace Whitaker, who is not a great player by any stretch of the imagination, is your number two corner. Okay, Jace Whitaker, Michael Dogby, who you just brought back.
He's been cut four times this year.
Right, was your highest defensive lineman, so like interior defensive lineman, snap count-wise.
Outside of J.J. Watt, of course.
Well, I just mean like because they list Watt as an end. So
oh,
like,
true.
Out of your like defensive left and right tackles, Dogby was the most snaps. He and Fotu.
You get Manny Jones, an undrafted rookie.
Right. You've got, you know, Ben Neiman getting snaps.
Turner playing significant playing time at linebacker.
Right. And so, like, you look at it from that perspective, okay, that's your defense. And then you look at the offense. And, again, you same thing. You know, Billy Price, street free agent. We're not trying to talk crap. You know, he's working his ass off.
Whom they chose not to bring back this year.
Right. Who they picked up off a practice squad, what, 3 weeks ago? Or 4 weeks ago?
It was at the beginning. It was at the very beginning of the year.
Okay, was it that?
It was. And then he started, and then he got hurt. It was in the first month of the season, I think. Then he started against Seattle and got hurt immediately, leading to Cody Ford. Yeah, Max. But they actively let Max go last offseason after he was Pro Bowl alternate, Max Garcia, mind you. And then they brought him back. Because
we talked about David Blau, right? Just got here
David
a week
Blau.
Ago.
Corey Clement playing the most.
32 snaps. 32.
Andre Bocelli playing 35 snaps.
I mean, this is just – it's a mishmash of things. And you look at it, and we're okay with Josh Jones playing, but he wasn't the starter, right? The only starters they have right now are Will Hernandez, who just came back 2 weeks ago, and Kelvin Beachum, who can barely walk. I mean, you have to tip your cap to Kelvin Beachum that he's even out there playing, because realistically, he shouldn't be.
He wants to finish the season. He's the only starter this season who hasn't missed a game.
And that's a big deal to him. And so he's trying to finish this thing out. I mean, that's the thing. You look at who's playing. I mean, hell, we can go to the special teams, right? You've got guys that we've never heard of that are now the long snapper and, you know, and things like that. Like these are, this is just, it's a bad year. It was a team that we talked about at the beginning, razor thin, right? With their, in terms of their roster. And it just ended up being a situation where it was a bad season and everybody got hurt as well.
Yeah.
And like, and so that's, you know, and so to win a game with those guys would have been cool because you're like, well, you know, look how hard they're playing for Cliff. But does it really make a difference if you won 19-17 or you lost 20-19 when you're 4-11 at that point? Well, it does, because you would have been picking, I think, seventh instead, right? And potentially, you know, no higher than sixth. And all of a sudden now you've got a chance, you've got a real chance at either, like you said, you know, you either have a chance at a blue chip guy or you're able to move down and stack some picks, potentially for a new GM. So, I mean, it's a lot of positives that you can look at.
And defensively, you look at, they started the game poorly and the run game completely gashed them. So they had in two of the first three series. So they, and well, mind you, the Falcons finished with only 298 total yards of offense. That's a fantastic performance overall by the Cardinals defense. And they gave up 151 of those in the first three possessions. And basically, really what happened is that at the end of the third possession, things turned for the defense. Atlanta had a 16-play, 75-yard drive that ended up with a touchdown. You know, they got gashed by Tyler Allgeier in that drive. They get the fumbled snap. Desmond Ridder fumbles the snap. The Cardinals get the football. So it was one play. The defense didn't have to do anything. In fact, it wasn't the defense's fault that caused the fumble. The next play, the next series, Atlanta goes 12 plays for 76 yards. And, well, 66 net, because they had penalties, but it's 12 plays, 76 yards, and it's a turnover and downs. And that's kind of where it turned, because then their total drives were 5 yards, 12 yards, 16 yards, 6 yards, then 46 yards, and then they gave up 72 yards on the final drive. And it's one of those things that the defense didn't close. They don't know how to close games. No matter how well they play for a half or three quarters, when they have to get a stop in clutch, at clutch moments of the game in the fourth quarter, they are unable to do it. In fact, now if we look, so they gave up. The first drive of the game was 75 total yards. I missed, so it's 66 yards for the third drive, because there were 10 yards penalty. They gained 76, but it was a net 66. The two drives where the Cardinals gave up the most yards were the first and the last drives. So good for the adjustments, bad for how they started and how they ended. But it does continue their streak. This has been the money. This has been the money stat, is that if an opponent rushes for 100 yards, the Cardinals are going to lose. They are 0-11 when the opponents rush for over at least 100 yards. They are 4-1 when they hold teams under 100 yards rushing. And that one loss was the fluky loss to the Chargers when they beat them without 100 yards on the ground. So 0-11 when they allow 100 yards. And this was an inevitability, because the Falcons had only failed to reach 100 yards once all season coming to this last weekend. Anything else, good or bad? You had to love the play of Trey McBride. He is really coming on. And you know, say what you will, he made a ton of mistakes early on in the season. And of course, when you got Zach Ertz, it was going to be hard. But you see how he played, and you have Cliff, And you have to be excited next year. Cliff talked about after the game of how excited he is to see both him and Ertz on the field at the same time in 12 personnel, because that is exciting.
Yeah, and it should be. I mean, he looks like he's developing into a solid two-way tight end, which is what they really need. I mean, Ertz is still a fantastic receiving tight end, but he lacks a little bit of the burst he used to have, obviously, at his age. And then he doesn't offer the same as a blocker. And so so then you go from there and you look at it, and you've got a guy in Trey who's turning into a very good two-way guy. That's going to be huge for next year for your, you know, two tight end splits and being able to do some different things.
Anything else? It was interesting to see.
I mean, it's cool to see Matt Prater, yeah, for the most, yes, part, do really well. People always ask why teams don't move on from, like, long snappers, kickers, punters, et cetera.
Because they get into routine, you change anything, and it changes. And you have to say this. Andy Lee did a masterful job, for the most part, of adjusting for Hunter Bradley's less-than-ideal low snaps. And to go 4 for 5, like Prater did with Hunter Bradley, and the one miss, you could tell the snap affected things, the snap and the hold affected things. We saw what Prater was last year when one part of the battery was out. He was atrocious. And he had the game-winning field goal that the Cardinals gave up another game-winning field goal after that.
Right, and so, you know, it was good to see him. I mean, I thought we mentioned it. I thought Christian Mathieu played well. It's cool to see JJ continue to get sacks. 10.5 sacks on the season's cool. That's a cool stat.
That is nice. He was a problem. Desmond Ridder, I will say this. Desmond Ridder did some really veteran things on the field.
Yeah, and he moves well, man, and that's what, you know, is impressive for him. But, you know, they're in a situation where they don't know what they're going to do, so who knows what's going to happen there.
All right, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Spencer Cardinals Talk on the Left. Let's move past the game and move kind of looking ahead. We've got DeAndre Hopkins with an injury. He didn't play on Sunday, might not play this week. We'll talk about him coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Spitstar Cardinals Talk on the Web. DeAndre Hopkins had a knee tweak. He had a knee issue on Friday. It was his surgically repaired knee from the year ago. And so he was held out of the game. And Cliff was noncommittal on Monday about whether Hopkins would play. This is an interesting thing because there are whispers. Obviously, you got his contract. You've got his age. And you've got whispers that he wants out. So if we look at the game this week, what are the pros and cons of him playing in the season finale?
I mean, pros is the obvious that he's the best offensive player you have still. Cons being if he gets hurt, you're just on the hook for him next year and he's probably not going to play. Super cons being that if you don't play him and he wants out, you're basically go playing into the fact that Cliff has no control, right? that there wasn't a knee issue. I mean, nobody's going to ever address it, but there probably wasn't a knee issue, and instead he just didn't want to play for the Cardinals anymore and quit. And I don't know, man, that's a tough one. That's a really, really tough one. Here's my thing. If guys don't want to be here, this is a hard thing to say and understand, but if guys don't want to be here, then just, you know, then that's one of the things you got to get out of this locker room. And, you know, if I've never had an issue with DeAndre or his work or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, if he doesn't want to be here, then I think you, while he definitely is the best player on the team still, at least on offense, you probably need to move on and see if that helps the situation. I don't know if it will, quite frankly, but we've seen the good and the bad, right? We've seen what's going on in Kansas City. We've seen what's going on in Miami and Las Vegas. You know, these guys and Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill, they got their money, which is what they wanted. You know, you look at Tyreek, he's putting up numbers that we've really not seen in a while. And you look at Davante, he's having another, you know, great season, leading the NFL in touchdown receptions. They both got paid and they're both on worse teams. I mean, it that's the thing, is like, for a lot of these guys, and I'm not saying this is DeAndre, I'm not saying this is Davante, I'm not saying this is Tyreek. I kind of am saying this is Tyreek. A lot of these guys don't necessarily care about winning Super Bowls. They do care about what their Hall of Fame numbers look like at the end. And the fact that Tyreek already has a Super Bowl and now he's putting up these astronomical numbers, that makes a huge difference, you know, for him. And then, like I said, I mean, if you're Davante, like, how unhappy did you have to be to want to go away from Aaron Rodgers, unless he's just that big of a, you know, D-bag to deal with? Like, you're talking about one of the 10 best quarterbacks of all time, and you're like, nah, I'm going to go play with Derek Carr, who's not a bad quarterback by any means, but, like, really, I mean, he's not Aaron Rodgers. So, I don't know, man. Like, it's tough, but if a guy doesn't want to be here, and if that's what it is, truly, and we have no reason to think it is with DeAndre. I mean, he's played through a lot. We've known about the leg issue the whole time. Then I think it's best for everybody involved if you move on, unless you bring in a coach that he's excited to play for, and that's a conversation we will have next week.
When we know if
they're moving on from Cliff.
Exactly. I think if there is, unless the knee checks out, like he's 100%, I don't see any pros to him playing, because you would hate for the knee to get a little worse, which makes him untradeable.
And his contract already makes it really tough for the Cardinals.
Absolutely, I mean, it does. He's going to be a hard trade to begin with.
Jess and I were doing the number crunching, so you don't have to. Trading DeAndre Hopkins will literally only save them $8.1 million. So while you might say, well, that's $8.1 million they don't have, are you going to be able to get a player
Hopkins,
that
you're not
going to
get his production or impact?
Right, for $8.15 million. So that's what you have to look at, because that 22 is already dead. So that doesn't matter. That's a sunk cost. So now you're only doing the 8.1, and that's what you have to look at. And so it's tough, man. So, you know, they got a lot of big decisions to make. Like you said, I mean, unless he's 85%+ and he's like, I can go, I'm with you. You can't put him out there, because you can't risk anything that has you losing him for a year or losing any ability to move on from him if you absolutely need to.
Yeah. So, yeah, playing, especially. And then we look at, if we also look at the context of this game, not that Hopkins is going to make the difference, but you have a better chance of winning a game against the San Francisco 49ers with DeAndre Hopkins than without him. And as much as we would love to see the Cardinals upset the 49ers, we don't want them to be the 49ers at this point. It would be a wasted win. It would be fun to see, but then it would be, you know, especially when we're looking at the Cardinals have a chance. They need help. They have a chance to go up to this number two pick. If they lose, well,
and there's
lose,
a chance,
they're just going to stay at number four at worst case scenario.
Well, and there's a chance that, I mean, this is, you know, looking ahead, and we don't cover these teams, but there's a legitimate chance that the Vikings just set their guys to get ready for the, and basically concede to have the third or to be the third place team in the NFC. And so, and end up losing to the Chicago Bears. So,
and if like, that happens, the Cardinals will at least move up to number three. And, you know, Denver could beat the Chargers. That I don't.
Yeah,
see
I mean they played well enough last week. I mean, they were close against the Chiefs. So, isn't that another thing too? A year to be awful when there's no clear-cut best team.
Right. Right. That's crazy. But, you know, so there for the potential of it, for his health, because if it's going to be hard to trade him to begin with, if in fact he does want to be traded and to get out, it's going to be hard enough. If he's got a bulky knee on top of that, you need to rest him so that knee gets right, so it clears any physical, so that he can be traded, because if he tweaks the knee in the season finale, then you're stuck with a 31-year-old injured DeAndre Hopkins that counts nearly $31 million against the cap in 2023.
Yeah, that's not you can't have that.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now let's talk about the quarterback situation. Aside from Kyler Murray, the quarterback position is kind of up in the air. Who's going to start? Who should start? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals have one game left. Kyler Murray obviously can't start. He just had his surgery on Tuesday. And Colt McCoy, oddly enough, how he was not in concussion protocol after he had concussion symptoms on Friday. Colt McCoy could start. David Blau could start. Trace McSorley could start. Let's talk about who we think will start and who we should start. So, if based on what you know right now, based on what you think right now, who do you think will be the starter this week of those three? McCoy, Blau, or McSorley?
I think it's going to be Blau until we hear that Colt is okay. And the reason I say that is only because we know San Francisco is going to bring their A game. They're playing for the one seed. So we're not going to see no Nick Bosa. We're not going to see no Fred Warner. We're not going to see their amazing defense take a step back, because they want to win the game. They want the one seed. They would like to not have to play in that first round game. So I would start Blau just because he's the biggest, most mobile, most healthy of the three. But I do think if he's able to, they'll still start Colt out of kind of reverence and respect to him.
Yeah, I think if Colt is healthy, he'll get the start. If he clears everything, because he's the starter, and it's not like they need to rest him for the future. He's 36 years old, and there's this element. If Colt is going to retire at the end of the season, he will insist that he starts.
And that's what I was going to say. That was a theory you had too. Like, if he's maybe talked to Cliff, especially after I mean, because remember, he's about the same age Kurt was. I think Kurt was a little bit older still. But, like, when Kurt had his last concussion against the Saints, and it kind of changed him, remember? And it made him think, maybe I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And so you wonder if that's a similar situation with Colt, and they just want to give him one more start, one more, you know, goodbye, so to speak, for thanks for everything he's done before he steps away and retires. And it would honestly, I mean, from everything we know, makes sense, because like you said, like last week was super weird. That was just an odd, the way it all came about was just super weird.
That was just like, so, Friday after practice, like, you know, Colt had some symptoms, so Blau's the starter. Like, wait, what? You're wondering, what happened to Trace McSorley?
Right, but then also for him not to enter protocol again.
Also, that's the weird thing of, like, he had a concussion. He cleared protocol. Then what they said were concussion-like symptoms. That, you would think, would automatically put them into protocol. And yet Monday, he wasn't in protocol.
Yeah, so I mean, that the whole situation's odd, and so that's what I said. I you know, if he's requesting to get a chance to start one more time, then I think you do it. I've told you off the record. I quite frankly, and you know, I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's married. If I was his wife, I'd be like, I want you to be done, man. Like, just one, another injury. You know, you and I looked it up. Like, he's made about $25 million in his career. It's tough for a guy like him that's only, and only his relative. So I don't want people to think like, oh, you guys, you know, $25 million. Like, trust us, $25 million is more than Jess and I will ever see in our lifetimes. Having said that, relative to other...
What are you talking about, this highly lucrative podcast that we run?
Right, exactly. If somebody would like to buy it for $25 million, you will never hear Jess and I again, ever. But yeah, like, you know, you look at it, could he be back? Because 3.75 is quite a bit of money for a
right
guy
like well, you and I were talking before the show, tied with this year, those are the two highest paid years he's had in the NFL.
And so, like, it just makes it tough, man. I hope, because I, you know, I've said all along, I love Colt McCoy, the quarterback, the guy he's been since he was at Texas, but like, his body was clearly just not built for the NFL. And the fact that he's had a 12-year career, he's started a ton of games, he's had success, and he's so respected, I think says more about Colt than it does anything else. But like, at the same time, it's like, I don't think this guy knows when to say enough is enough for himself. And you know, we've seen that. Like, he gets up and wants to try to play again, and that's just, I mean, sometimes somebody needs to protect a guy from themselves.
Yeah, I would personally, now, if taking the Colt McCoy thing out, like, if he's going to come back next year, then now the right thing to do is to have Colt start. But wouldn't you like to see another start at David Blau? Especially because the Cardinals over the last couple of years they've picked up on a trend, and that is their third string quarterback, they swap out their third string quarterback and basically get a head start on some player evaluation in practice, so they don't have to, so they know something about that player before the off season. They can decide to bring him back. Last year, a few weeks left in the season, they cut Chris Streveler and signed Trace McSorley. They had seen enough of Streveler. This year, you know, they signed, now granted, it was motivated by the Kyler Murray injury, but I'm not 100% sure if, had Kyler still been healthy, guess what? It's very possible that they could have cut McSorley and signed David Blau anyway. to give him, you know, to give him some practice reps on scout team during the week, kind of get him acclimated to the system, do a little evaluation, taking aside, is this a guy we want as the third quarterback on the roster? But the way he played against the Falcons, now granted, we, you know, again, Trace McSorley was playing a good, was playing against a good Tampa defense. Trace McSorley, David Baugh playing against the Atlanta Falcons defense, which is not great. And if he were to start, he'd be starting against the San Francisco 49ers, number one defense in the NFL. So
the best defense in the NFL. So.
By far, the most dominant defense in the NFL. So, yeah. Maybe we don't want to see David Blau, but it's at the same time, Colt McCoy, while he did beat them last year, the wheels fell off this year because his, like, the way they play with Colt, which is get the ball out short, quick passes behind the line of scrimmage. San Francisco is disciplined and tackles really well, and so they had no hope at all. They had no hope at all. So I guess we're like with the rest of the Cardinals fans and saying we just don't want to see Trace McSorley start, right? And that's sad for him.
Yeah,
I feel like this is the thing about this job between the where we write, the fact I get to, I have some media access, is that it's very easy to see the human side of things. These are, you know, a guy like Trace McSorley who was a starting quarterback in college. So many and so many of these players, most of them were one of the best players in football from the time they were young. Then you get to the NFL and you're clawing and scratching just to find a job, and then you finally get an opportunity, and then the team's done with you. And that seems to be what happened to Trace McSorley. So that's a tough pill to swallow in this league and how it works. But so yeah, we of course I did say that literally nobody except for David Trace McSorley's friends, family, and maybe a few coaches and Penn State fans want to see Trace McSorley start. And now we're to the point where we still don't want to see Trace McSorley start. But I feel bad for him because that's tough. That's a tough part of the gig in the NFL.
It is, man. It's just, it's unfortunate it gets to be that point every once in a while. But like you said, it's part of the gig, and I think they understand it at times too.
They do understand it. That doesn't make it any easier, I don't think. Don't think it makes it any easier. With that, coming up next on the Rise Up Here at Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's come back and talk about Cardinals 49ers. How bad is it going to be? Do the Cardinals have any chance of anything again that game? That's coming up next on Rise Up Here. We're back on the Rise Up Here at Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals take on the San Francisco 49ers this weekend on the road, week 18, 2:25 p.m. Arizona time. The 49ers still have things to play for. They have a shot at the number one seed, and they won't know whether it's already locked up because the Eagles game is being played in the late afternoon slot as well. And so the 49ers will have every reason to come out with their A game against the Cardinals, put them away, and then coast
at,
to the
at end. 11 a.m. too.
And so, yeah. Is there... We saw what the Cardinals did offensively against them the last time they played. Do they have any chance at all?
I mean, there's always a chance, but not really. Especially after the 49ers played so poorly against LA or Las Vegas this last weekend.
That's right. They couldn't stop Jarrett Stidham. David Blau. Yeah. David Blau's coming for him. But you're going to be doing that without DeAndre Hopkins, without Zach Ertz, maybe without James Conner, with two-fifths of a starting offensive line. And then defensively, they've been missing their cornerbacks, no Buda Baker. What the heck? There's a reason why the 49ers, depending on what you're looking at, depending on the sports book, 14 points or more is the spread in this game. You rarely see point spreads that high. Because that's crazy.
That's a super, super insanely high number.
We're talking Bills-Texans type thing.
Yeah, it's so I just, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't see. Here's the thing. I'll probably take them to cover, but I don't think I think they'll lose by like 13 to 10 to 13. I don't 14 so many.
It is so much, but I'm like, how are the Cardinals going to do anything offensively?
That's a fair point.
How? Like, they've been so bad offensively. David Blau got their first passing touchdown since Kyler Murray's injury.
Yeah, I know. I wish, I mean.
They've scored four touchdowns in four games.
It's crazy to me that, like, there's still people that are like, you know, maybe Blau gives you a better chance to win. I'm like.
No, he doesn't.
Have you guys been watching
Have you watched the NFL?
No, I don't think a lot of people do, man. I don't. And which is fine. I mean, like, you know, we've talked about it with Tampa Bay, right? Like, they've only had like two good games this whole year. They've just been surviving. I mean, heck, I mean, look at Green Bay this last week. They beat the Packers they beat the Vikings 41-17, right? 41-17. And
the Vikings, a 12-win team with a negative point differential.
Right. Aaron Rodgers has 159 yards passing and one touchdown. Like, they didn't do anything. It was because they had, you know, they had multiple defense special teams touchdowns and they were able to like get the ball in short fields and do things like that. But, you know, it's crazy to think that there are, you know, are people that are fine with the product on the field or don't think that like they didn't see something better 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago before Kyler got hurt. So, you know, it is what it is. But like this week, like you said, it's tough to see it, man, with Blau, without DeAndre, with potentially without Connor. I guess we're going to continue to watch and see how Josh Jones continues to play because he's been very good. I don't know what the plan will be long term for him. Are they going to move DJ Humphreys to the right side where he's failed, or are they
no
going to give
chance? I think are they are prepared. They're prepared to put Josh Jones over right tackle. It's got to be the case.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see how this goes. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, this is the means to the end of the season, and you're just patiently waiting to see the outcome and see if they, you know, get through this as healthy as possible and ready to kind of, and I think we're kind of all just waiting to see what next week holds, right?
Right. Like I want to see the Sunday evening email press release that they have.
So I think you and I should get a thought out there before anything happens, and we're not talking about anything inside. We don't have any inside information. We're not breaking news or anything. So let me ask you this: if they fire Cliff next week, who are the acceptable replacements for you? Like, who would you be like, okay, at least I can respect that move?
That's a tough question. Obviously, the big name is Sean Payton. That's one that moves the needle, right? He moves the needle. Jim Harbaugh. Oh, yeah. Jim Harbaugh's good. Who do you do? Do you do one? You get a coach who's had experience? Do you have to go that route this time? Or do you go the coordinator route? You definitely don't go the college route again because that was out of pocket. And a bold move that the Cardinals did in 2019. But, yeah, it feels like if you're going with someone unproven, I honestly can't think of another guy I'd want. You know, Sean Payton, Jim Harbaugh moved the needle. Other than that, I'm like, they're less proven than Cliff at this point, because right. you're getting somebody's coordinator position or retread that's failed. Well, Cliff at least is before this year had his teams improve each year, even though each end of the season has been bad.
When you think about it too, like, you know, like Mike McDaniel, I mean, he was the hot guy and Buffalo, or sorry, Miami had one of the, you know, biggest end of the season failures we've seen in a while. I mean, they were 8-3 and now they're 8-8. You know, like, would you be okay with like a Frank Reich? Would that be enough?
Okay. I thought the Cardinals should have hired Frank Reich in 2019.
I think you and I both did. So, but like, would that move the needle, or would you?
I don't think it moves the needle, especially since he was replaced in Indianapolis by Jeff Saturday. So
and may actually be their coach next year too.
I will say this. I really like Jeff Reich. I believe he has the pedigree to, like, he's been with a number of coaches. He had success. But then things kind of fell apart. It does feel way different than, say, the Adam Gase rumors that the Cardinals had back in 2019, where, like, why in the world, like, he was literally just fired. Why in the world would you hire him?
And we saw that worked out.
It didn't work out at all. So I can understand that a head coach that just fired doesn't seem like a good candidate to hire. But then again, it was the Colts, and they look awful. But they
might be a nightmare as well, right?
So yeah, I wouldn't mind Frank Reich, because I thought that he was the right hire in 2019. Personally, but he wasn't even on the radar.
Well, and that goes back to what we talked about before, is are these guys gonna have a shot at these guys, right? Like, is that something that happened because Frank Reich didn't want to come here? And we're just speculating. I mean, we knew Eric Bieniemy didn't want to come here, and then the guy that ended up in Tennessee, that offensive line guy, I can't remember his name, that was with the Steelers forever, but yeah, he didn't want to come here. Mike Mularkey, you know, but, and so, like, so I'm just going through the big names this offseason. So, like, Lou Anarumo, the DC from the Bengals, I don't think that moves the needle too much, right?
No.
Then we talked about it. Bieniemy is probably not coming here. He's already turned it down before. Ken Dorsey.
Nobody excites me.
A guy, the Broncos defense coordinator, Ahiro Evero, Leslie Frazier, John Gannon, the DC from Philly. So, yeah, I mean, Harbaugh, Payton. I mean, the rest of these guys, I don't know. Kellen Moore, I mean, doesn't that seem kind of lateral?
Yeah, right. Kellen Moore, is he anything more than Cliff Kingsbury? Is he just Cliff Kingsbury? Like, basically, he's the same guy.
You think you can bring back Steve Wilkes?
No, he wouldn't even come here.
No, I know.
No way. No way. No.
But yeah, I mean, so that's the reason I want to talk about before. So I don't think you and I are vehemently opposed to Cliff being fired. it just needs to make sense, and we want to make sure it makes sense of like you're moving up and not just another Cardinals lateral coaching move to have a different coach, right? Like right. to bring in a different guy. And so
and the fact that just if you watch the Cardinals play the last several weeks, aside from the second half of the San Francisco game where that game got out of hand, the effort, there were effort problems. I'm not even saying like the one they picked on was the Antonio Hamilton thing. He said he thought the Kittle was going out of bounds, and so he gave up on the play. He stopped. But the effort didn't seem to be there, but that was a miserable game. That, you know, you're getting beat down by that much. It's really tough. But since that game, the effort level has been tremendous. They just are bad. That's what it is. So they are playing hard enough. They're just not good enough. And is that the result of Kliff's coaching? That's what's hard, because he's clearly getting the players to still perform and get up for these games, and that might be the greatest trait.
Compliment you can give him,
right? And that might be like, because, you know, going into this weekend, there is no way that Michael Bidwill does not know whether he's firing Kliff or not. You don't go into a season finale wondering, well, I'm going to wait and see how they play this week and then going to decide to fire him. The Cardinals know whether they're going to fire Kingsbury or not. And so from there, what are they going to do? What are they going to do?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, is like, what are you and I expecting? I don't know. I mean, I think it's a coin flip. I think we both feel that way. And I just think that you and I both feel that way because we just don't know what's out there necessarily that's going to be a definitive upgrade from what Kliff has been. I mean, you look at it, this has been an awful year, and there's no way around that. But Kliff has, you know, led them to a playoff. They improved every year until this year. You know, so if you're coming out of it with Sean Payton or Jim Harbaugh, I think you're okay.
Yeah. And then the other guy, of all the retreads out there, I think there's one other guy that would work. And now, for those of you listening, this is the second take at this. You didn't hear the first take, but I'd also be okay with Frank Reich. I wanted them to hire. I thought they should have hired Frank Reich. I thought he was the best candidate, and he wasn't even considered. He wasn't even on their radar. I thought Frank Reich was the best candidate then. I think he would be a good candidate now as well. Although it does give us a kind of an Adam Gase feel. Because Adam Gase, when he got fired by the Dolphins, and then the Cardinals were considering him, and they were bad. Like his offense wasn't good. He kind of ruined the quarterback, and every player that left Miami seemed to thrive elsewhere. And so it does kind of feel like Adam Gase a little bit, but at the same time, I just think Reich had some bad situations there with the quarterback position in Indy. But it would look weird. I would say this. If you were to fire Kliff Kingsbury to hire Frank Reich, who was fired to be replaced by Jeff Saturday, who is awful, whose team is awful, and still might end up being the coach next year of the Colts, that, like, he doesn't, I'm okay with it, but it certainly doesn't move the needle, right?
Yeah, and that's just the thing. I mean, you look at the top candidates, you know, the top names, who are guys that are going to change this culture, and who are guys that are going to take this to the next level. And you know, Payton and Harbaugh will change the culture. Reich is another guy that, you know, five seasons, three winning seasons, he was 7-9 one season, and then obviously the wheels fell off this season. How much of that was on Ryan Grigson, you know, boy genius over there, that kept rolling out quarterbacks that you went to high school with and stuff like that. So you've got to look at all the things. The question becomes, if it's a guy like Reich, who's going to be the GM? Because if it's Payton or Harbaugh and you're going to pay them $20 million a year, which is the numbers that's being thrown around by people in Denver right now, then you're assuming they're going to have personnel decision making as well. Like, you'll have a GM, like, you know, Adrian Wilson or Quentin Harris will be the GM, but at the end of the day, you know, the buck's going to stop with Sean or Jim. So if you bring in a Reich, are you going to get a, is it going to be with a guy like, with like A-Dub or Quentin, or are they going to go outside? Like, and then that's the other factor that we always talk about, right? Who's going to want this gig? Who's going to want to come here if it is A-Dub or Quentin Harris?
And remember last offseason that the chatter was Adrian Wilson with Byron Leftwich. If they fired Cliff Kingsbury to hire Byron Leftwich, that would look so awful. And it might work out, but that would look absolutely terrible considering what Tampa's offense did this year.
Right, exactly. And just how bad Tampa Bay looked this year with all their weapons. It'll just be interesting to see what happens, man. But at this point, it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. I don't think you and I have a definitive take. We're both at that it's a coin flip if Cliff is back. And quite frankly, it's just because I don't think there was enough definitive. I know this year was awful, but I don't know how much of that you just blame on Cliff and move on.
Right. And then you've got the uncertainty coming on. Yeah, I could totally see with the new, especially with the fire kind, and they move on from him. I could see the new general manager coming in and letting Cliff kind of work through this, build a new roster for him, see if they can tread water till Kyler comes back and finish strong and change, you know, change the narrative. Every year they've faded poor, badly at the end of each season. And on top of that, at least then you don't have to eat as much of that contract. You're not technically firing him before the extension takes effect. You're firing after two failed years, which if you look at from a fairness perspective, when you have a head coach that has improved the team each year, and then is ravaged by injuries, and it goes south, it almost feels like it's unfair to not give that coach a chance to then come out of it.
Yeah, dig himself out of that hole.
Right. But next week, we'll be back. We'll definitely be back next week for the next show. This is episode 388 of Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll have a lot to talk about next week because the Cardinals season will be done. Will they have fired Cliff? If they haven't, we'll be talking about, well, why didn't they? If they do, well, we're going to be talking about candidates. Who's next? Who's acceptable? What's going to happen? What's going to happen to the roster? So much going to be happening over the next couple of weeks with this show. So, again, make sure to tune in next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always. Go Cardinals. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.